Have you been avoiding conflict lately? Are you afraid that if you speak your truth to someone, you might damage the relationship permanently? Is inner conflict eating you up inside? Maybe you're thinking one thing, but doing another, and you just can't seem to get your head and heart to line up. As humans, we all deal with conflict. Join Jennifer McKenna now as she talks to business leaders about the importance of conflict and how we can all move through it with greater grace and ease, ultimately taking our relationships and our lives to the next level by facing conflict courageously.
Welcome to the show, Conflict Rising, everyone. It's Jennifer, and today we're talking about our confusing relationship with food. So each week we talk about conflict-inducing topics or subject matter, and that can be anywhere from what's causing us internal conflict to what's causing us external conflict. So we cover a very wide range of topics each week. And this week I'm very excited to have Paige Love join us. Paige is a dietitian who specializes in eating disorders, and I have tons of questions for Paige about why we have the types of relationships we do with food. So Paige, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm excited about being here and being able to share a little bit about how dietitians can help people who are struggling with any level of emotional struggle with food.
Perfect. Perfect. So before we get too deeply into the subject matter, can you share with our listeners what got you into this field to begin with?
Sure. I was one of those lucky ones, I think, that just early on, I'm going to say even down as young as 12 years old, I kind of was always reading about nutrition. And I think part of it came from I had kind of one of those hippie moms that drug me around a health food store when I was really young. And I don't know, in Atlanta, we have a place called Nuts and Berries and, you know, things like that. And I'm not actually to that extreme. It's probably good that I had that exposure to know I didn't want to be to that extreme, but it got me, exposed to just healthy eating as a way of a lifestyle. And I ended up being a competitive tennis player as a kid and played in college too. And the very first book I read, and I want to say I was age 14 when I read this, was a book that Martina Navratilova, and I may be aging myself right now, but she and her biochemist nutritionist wrote together called Eat to Win. And so I read it cover to cover, and it was in the days of high carbohydrate, high fiber eating. That was kind of when I first got into my career, that was really the focus. Fad diet wise, and we won't even call it fad diet anymore because that's still really the science-based supports is fueling the body. And it was a good solid book about sport nutrition. So my areas of specialty now are sport nutrition and eating disorders. So I do, I have a master's degree in sport nutrition, and I specialize in working with athletes, both males and females, who struggle with fueling themselves appropriately to the extreme of maybe it being a full-blown eating disorder. And, you know, it can be a weekend warrior athlete to a professional athlete. I'm the dietitian for the men's and women's professional tennis tours, and I travel to about 4 to 5 tournaments a year. And I'm on site for helping athletes at the highest level of that sport with their immediate nutrition needs, like dealing with heat illness or dealing with a fatigue issue from travel or dealing with a food safety issue that came up if they got bad food in China, for example, or that kind of thing. So I really kind of have two specialties, so I'm glad to kind of answer questions in both areas. But the interesting thing is when people make a decision to come to a dietitian, it's usually because something's out of balance with their eating. And usually I find that's triggered more from something with an emotional base than a physical base. Now, there are some people that have purely physical issues, let's say celiac disease or something like that, where, you know, there's a definite diagnosis that they're coming in to have a specialized diet to treat it. But more so than not, it's emotionally based imbalances that are causing a physical side effect. And so I'm often working with a therapist. In fact, my current locations in Atlanta, I'm in two different therapy practices where I'm the dietitian in the therapy practice. And I have the team of people right around me to be able to refer the client to get the full reign of help in the emotional realm that they may need to support their nutritional healing.
So this is, so it, you do have a really fascinating background because you kind of transcend, I guess, the different avenues, because I notice you also consult with the Atlanta Braves, the Atlanta Ballet, the Atlanta Falcons cheerleading. So there's that element of, you know, there's that whole part of the population, and I like to, dare I say, I'm sort of on the cusp of becoming one of them, where I want to eat for strength, right? I want to eat to support strength training and that type of thing. But I come from a background in my early adulthood where I was diagnosed with a chronic illness, and I don't attribute it 100% to my eating habits, but my eating habits certainly were exacerbating it. And so there is this huge umbrella when you think about our relationship with food, and I think that's why it can be so confusing at a commercial level, where we're inundated with all kinds of packaged diets. You use the word fad before, and I'm just using a very informal jargon that I came up with myself. So I don't know what the right framework is for my vocabulary on this, but as a consumer, I see all the time through ads in multimedia efforts to convince me to eat this particular diet or that particular diet. And there's all these different ways to actually fill your entire kitchen with a well-branded selection of foods from those diets, you know, and we could go down the list of names, you know, Atkins, Weight Watchers, you know, what else is there? The Miami Beach. I have no idea. I haven't done any of them, but I'm so fascinated that we've commercialized our eating habits in this way. And so I'd love for you to unravel so much of what drove this industry. What do you believe drove this industry, and who do you think its real target should be?
Well, that's a very broad question, but as far as what's driving it and why, you know, this is a weight loss, if we just look at the weight loss side of it, the weight loss industry is a multi-billion dollar industry, is that we struggle with obesity in our country. We're one of the leading countries with, you know, a major epidemic proportion of obesity. So, and in my opinion, a lot of obesity comes from emotional disorder eating at the base of it. And I think a lot of people aren't seeking the full type of help that they should need. But we're also in a society where people want the quick fix. So, as you know, being in a business where there's even maybe marketing ads in your own type of radio show, the quick fix, the magic bullet, is what draws the person in. And so I think years ago, decades ago, the quick fix with a diet that might promise quick weight loss, whether or not it's maintainable or healthy, has been kind of the crux of the demise of this industry, in my opinion. So back to my comment about diets, you know, when I first came on the scene, and again, I'll age myself, but I came on the scene 30 years ago as a dietitian, and the high carb, Pritikin, high fiber, low fat approach was really the popular trend, and it was a little bit healthier. And even some of the diets some of you may have heard of, like the grapefruit diet or the rice diet, those were popular. The cabbage soup diet, those kind of things. So those are all examples of high carb, low protein, fully an adequate and balanced diets that are causing you to, or asking you to, eliminate whole food groups, and in this case, not getting enough protein, possibly not getting enough fat. Now, Pritikin was a little bit more balanced, but when we look at the single food diets like grapefruit diet, rice diet, cabbage soup diet, those are all examples of high carb, low protein, low fat. So you basically are starving your body of protein. And then in the last two decades, if we want to move forward quickly, as you've already mentioned, you know, all these diets, keto, paleo, Atkins, sugar busters, all of this stuff, South Beach, I think is what you were referring to. These are all higher protein, lower carb diets. Keto being the latest, you know, and high fat, high protein diets. The science does not support that these are safe for long term. People do lose weight quickly in a very short time period. And if someone was to do one of these diets and then return to pretty healthy eating habits, they may have very little physical negative side effects medically. But long term, these are quite depriving of the body and cause you to lose a lot of water weight, muscle weight, and really throw your entire hunger fullness system off. So I just think what's driven this is the need or the desire to, as we see in any other area of our culture, have it now, have it quickly, and get that weight off as fast as possible. And what I remind a lot of my clients is that it takes time to lose weight when you're losing real excess fat tissue that you've slowly been gaining over time. And that I often find successful weight loss rates mirror the rate that someone gained weight. So for some, that's the body's physiology. So if someone did gain rapidly, their chances of being able to lose more rapidly are higher. But what the science also, what research also tells us is that for most adults, losing weight at a rate of 1 to 3 pounds a week is the safe, and 3 being really on the high end. Men can sometimes lose that 3 pounds a week. The safer rate of weight loss that, where you can actually be losing the majority of the tissue being lost in the form of fat. When you're losing faster than that, you're losing muscle, potentially even organ mass. The body doesn't selectively only lose leg and arm tissue. It's losing evenly throughout the entire body. So when you're losing 5+ pounds a week, which many people do, starting an extreme diet like the ones we've been talking about, they're losing some essential functional mass that also contributes to a healthy, normal metabolism. And by the end of this diet, they are zonking their metabolism and setting themselves up for regain and really haven't addressed the crux of the issue with their poor eating habits. They've just got a quick fix band-aid on top of probably a lot of emotional baggage with their eating habits that may have even started at early childhood. So it's a long run to shift these habits.
Yeah. And I did ask you a very broad question. We covered a lot of ground and I apologize for that. But, you know, I love that you've touched on all these things because I honestly don't know. I'm asking from a very ignorant space, but I certainly have opinions because I'm raising teenage kids. I have a teenage daughter. She's at a very impressionable age around body image. And she and her girlfriend were in the car, and I have always kind of been on the sidelines watching these commercial diets take, you know, hit the culture and just fan out and take, I mean, just have huge popularity. And in my mind, I'm thinking from a common sense standpoint, you know, I'm glad that you're able to cite science, that science does not support their long-term health benefit or sustainability, because common sense to me says, we've known since how long? It feels like the beginning of time to me that we need a balanced diet. Eat your fruit, eat your veggies, eat your carbs, eat your protein, right? And your fats. And I mean, I'm going to date myself because I go back to elementary school days where we had our little, you know, FDA approved charts in our classrooms in elementary school. So I said to my daughter and her friend one day, guys, it's not complicated. If you listen to all that, it makes it so complicated. It's not complicated. So why, Paige, do so many human beings complicate it? Why do we resist the simplicity of a balanced diet?
Because it takes work. It takes time. And you're talking about shifting ingrained behavior patterns that for a lot of, you know, I see a lot of people from, you know, teen years through, you know, middle ages. And for a lot of the people that come to me for the first time have never seen a registered dietitian, and they're in their 40s or 50s and addressing a 30-year issue with being overweight or disordered eating patterns. That's 30 years of behavior patterns that they have ingrained, and that's going to take hard work. I think most people can relate to the idea of going into therapy, you know, psychotherapy, and maybe addressing, you know, some kind of familial unhealthy pattern that's occurred, or, you know, trying to shift something in your life at a behavioral level. Eating behavior is a very similar thing. Again, has a deep-rooted emotional basis. And that's why I work hand-in-hand with therapists and really feel that the importance of a treatment team that encompasses a dietitian, a therapist, a physician, or it might be a pediatrician if it's a teenager, and possibly even a psychiatrist if there's a need for mood psychotropic medication to help the situation. So
yeah. Well, I love that. Yeah. So in my career, I do behavior change in the workplace. So I work on corporate culture, and I do understand how deeply ingrained in that neural system those beliefs are, and they drive the behaviors. So I can completely track what you're saying and how intense, right, that therapy can be to undo all the damage of that conditioned behavior. So when you look at when you're working with clients and you get to the base of where the conditioning began and where the beliefs are that are disempowering them and causing them to eat in unhealthy ways, do you find that it comes back to body image, a self-esteem issue? What do you see most prevalent at the base of those behaviors?
Those are some of the things. I think self-esteem would probably be a little bit closer to a core issue that then would impact someone's body image. But I think it goes even deeper to one of the first questions I ask when somebody comes in my door, and I have an hour and a half initial consultation. I do quite extensive psychosocial history related to someone's eating and family eating history, is that it's often related to, you know, how they were brought up around food. I cannot tell you how many people will say, you know, my mom was dieting my entire time as a teenager. She put me on my first diet when I was an adolescent and slightly overweight. So it's ingrained at such a young age. And I'm not blaming moms or females in general. It could be a dad as well who might have struggled with weight and also was dieting. We also have a lot of diet talk going on in our household, as you're, you know, mentioning all these popular diets. Well, it's a common topic of conversation. So in families and in our households, whether it be within family or with a husband and wife, there's a lot of talk about what's good, what's bad, what we should have, shouldn't have, what diet they're on, food choices they made, how much weight they lost. That's a lot of triggering talk for a lot of people out there, and it also puts an undue amount of focus on food and weight. So I try to help normalize a lot of that.
So we're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to continue to talk to Paige Love about the origin of some of these eating habits. Stay tuned.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. OM Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
I'm Kathy Williams, host of Sexy Mom Abundant Life radio show on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. On the show, we explore living abundantly in every area of your life, ways to let go of limiting patterns and beliefs, and to step into the flow of creativity and possibility, knowing you are supported by the universe.
Opiates has taken everything and everyone I've ever loved away from me. Everything.
I blew my ankle out and I got prescribed pain pills by my doctor.
If making my detox public is going to help somebody, I'm all for it.
I just wish I would have had a warning.
Opioid dependence can happen after just 5 days. Know the truth, spread the truth. A message from Truth, the Ad Council, and ONDCP.
Welcome back, everyone. We're talking to Paige Love, a registered dietitian, about our confusing relationship with food. And Paige, before the commercial break, we had to cut off our conversation. I want to pick it back up. We're talking about, you know, what's really at the heart, the root of the unhealthy eating patterns and behaviors and habits. And now, you know, one of them that's so prevalent is coping, right? People eat to cope with their stress. Do you think that that's something they were conditioned to do, or do you think that in a way they're coping from some of the conditioned beliefs about themselves or their body image? Like, where do some of these specific habits play out in your work that you see the most?
I do think a lot of people were conditioned from a young age and saw modeling in their family systems for eating when they were stressed, eating when they had accomplished something as a reward, eating out of boredom. Now, I'm not blaming all families at all, but I think it's just something we've passed from generation to generation. And then obviously there are environmental influences too, like, you know, you get into college and somebody, you know, has a roommate that's got poor eating habits, or, you know, as you've already said, I work with eating disorders. I had a college-age kid in recently, and they shared, well, you know, I became bulimic when my roommate showed me how to purge for the first time. So that would be another example of more environmental influences. I even personally struggled my freshman year in college with just that, having all that cafeteria food available, having free rein to go up and get second servings. I'm a food lover. This is another reason why I'm in the field that I'm in. I love to eat, and I'm a passion for food. I don't know that I call myself a foodie, but you know, probably pretty close to that. So when all of a sudden I had good food available to me in very large quantities, I started to feel like I was getting into a little bit of overeating. But because I was able to kind of rein that in pretty quickly and be aware that, you know, my body was responding in an unhealthy way, I was like, oh, okay, I've overshot it a little bit. That little safety gauge I described to my clients kind of went off in my head and said, okay, this is too much, you know. And so I was able to kind of take backtrack and increase my activity. And I was also a college athlete, very hungry and doing a heavier level of training than I had ever done before. So I was extremely hungry and just trying to figure out, make that transition to college athletics on how much food I actually really needed. So I do think this happens sometimes, that people need, as they go through transitional life changes, they need time to adjust and make that transition healthfully. And if you've had healthy upbringing and modeling to be able to sense when there's a need to listen in to what your body's telling you and make a shift, then that transition happens earlier. If you haven't had that healthy modeling, you might have a tougher time and may need outside help and guidance in achieving that. Mm-hmm. So those are little snippets of examples of things I hear, but I think you hit the nail on the head in talking about an adjustment to stress. So when there's a stressful change that occurs in our life, and for a lot of people that might be a transitional life change from grade school to high school, from high school to college, from college to living independently, from living independently to moving into a marriage situation, from getting married to having your first child, moving into middle age. I don't mind sharing that I'm in the middle ages and went through menopause and developed hypothyroidism, and my weight shot up again. And so I immediately realized it was happening, sought the right medical support, adjusted my diet, and I didn't do any of this perfectly. I'm right there with the rest of us, but I had to readjust and change the way that I was doing my eating at that time, as my metabolism was slowing down, and I wasn't as active, and I had orthopedic issues that prevented me from being as active as I'd like to be. So these are all examples of little life changes that for some people are very difficult to transition through and stay status quo with their body. Most people struggle with this. So I think being able to utilize your external help, you know, which would be someone like me, your physician, a specialist, you know, your whole health team, and maybe some written tools that are out there that are solid and backed by science, that, you know, putting that all together to help us make that transitional life change successfully without having to do something extreme.
Mm-hmm. I am a firm believer that, you know, we don't change on our own. I think there was a very horrible kind of movement around many years ago around how you're just, you know, everybody should be accountable. And I mean, yes, we all should be accountable. I'm stating this wrong, but it's almost like from that bootstraps mentality, it's the idea that we shouldn't need help or we should never ask for help. And wherever that originated, it is probably one of the worst points of toxicity to our culture because no one can really do big changes alone successfully, in my opinion, especially behaviorally. The human brain is wired around habit, right? I mean, it likes to cycle through things. We know that. We know how hard it is to make changes when we've gotten into a bad cycle or a bad pattern. So why do we think we can do this alone? We need a support system, someone who can guide us. You know, even as a coach, I think of myself as a Sherpa, and you may think of yourself the same way. I don't know. But, you know, just to provide tools and guidance and say, hey, I'm going to get you where you want to go. I think it's super hard for people to try to take something like this on themselves. So I love your approach. I think it's awesome. You know, I want to kind of move into what can we do about it. I know everyone can secure your services and other registered dietitians, but where can we start in, let's look at the big picture first. How can we look at our roles maybe as even parents or working parents, right? How can we set a new tone for the generations that are coming behind us so that culturally and collectively we can make some bigger shifts? I'm sure it starts at the micro level with our individual behavior, but I'd love for us to make a big commitment to kind of shift the things that cause it to begin with, which you spoke about earlier in the show, which is, you know, what mom told me or what mom did, or, you know, we all picked up patterns. I didn't have an eating problem, but I certainly smoked a lot of cigarettes in my day, right? Everybody has something. And where do we begin? Where do we begin on the practical level, Paige? Help us out. Tell us what to do.
it takes a village, like you're saying. It takes a team, and there are those few people who can, you know, get a lot of the tools and ideas from self-help sources and reading and that kind of thing. And obviously, there's all kinds of resources on the internet and YouTube and all these kind of things. So there, you know, there's lots of different level places that people might get help. But I think first it comes from an internal motivation, an internal desire for change. I try to use a little bit of motivational interviewing with my clients when I'm talking with them for the first time to find out what they are wanting to accomplish. One of the first things that I ask when a client comes in my door is, what are you hoping to get out of today? What would you like to see change? And then I also will kind of, as I'm reviewing their medical history, ask them if they have a whole battery of things going on, what's the area that you want to address? What's first on your list? Is it fatigue? Is it your tummy issues? Is it that you want to be you know, a better athlete, more powerful, gain muscle, lose body fat, whatever it might be? What are your priorities? We can't accomplish them all. And I think another cause for failure is people trying to take on too many things at once and trying to do it perfectly. And that is a recipe for disaster right there. So trying to take, I'm a big believer in baby steps, trying to take little things and just gradually move it along. And again, reminding ourselves that we didn't get to this place of wherever we are that we're not pleased with overnight. we're not going to be able to change that overnight, and it's going to take time to make that change. So trying not to bite off too much. And I will also interact with my clients around what is a realistic goal in the area that we're trying to make a shift on. I do talk with my clients both about their nutrition and fitness, because it is an energy balance equation. And so we're needing to look at how much someone is taking in, how much they are burning, whether it be through their activity or their daily metabolic rate. And I do actually have assessment tools to measure those kind of things. But it's an energy balance equation, any way we look at it. But we also have to be aware that there are things that throw the metabolism off, like hypothyroid and PCOS, or a disease state that may have taken a toll on the body. Stress itself takes a similar kind of toll and can affect the metabolism. And that's something that we don't even have a real good handle on how to measure, but we see the side effects with all the autoimmune diseases. I'm seeing more and more autoimmune diseases, and hypothyroidism is one of those. But I'm seeing a whole battery of those almost every day with people coming in my door. Probably the most common type of approach I'm using dietarily that has a sound science base is an anti-inflammatory Mediterranean style eating approach with lots of good high fiber, colorful foods, more seafood, adequate lean proteins, adequate vegetable oils, but not avoidance of any one major nutrient area. So all foods can fit. There are some things we need more of, some things we need less of. So I try to, at the very beginning of my work with someone, help them develop more of an open mindset and less critical mindset about food. If they think there's a whole huge list of things they can't have, they will stay stuck in a deprivation overeating cycle. But if you slowly pick away at those things you can't have and learn how to mindfully allow those things and not ever do it, you will start to slowly have a better handle on your energy balance and not be overdoing it with those foods anymore. And you'll no longer be driven psychologically to overdo on those foods, because they're no longer foods that you feel like you can't have. So there's a couple of different little things I'll do with people to kind of see where they are with all of this. Most of the people that do come to see me, and my guess that come to see most registered dietitians, are often coming in with the mindset of a diet and expecting to be deprived and expecting to be put on a low-calorie approach, thinking that it's not going to be enjoyable, thinking that they're not going to get to enjoy food over a long time period. That their enjoyment of dining out in social situations will be taken away. And that's not the case. It does not have to be that way. So kind of just educating, open their eyes to that. I don't play the role of a therapist, but I do utilize some therapeutic skills, and I'm a big believer in the power of positive thinking and being less critical about our faults with eating and our body. And just shifting our mind to a more positive, accommodating, less judging place about our body size. You mentioned body image. I do body image work every day with clients in very small ways, whether it be having a simple goal of not beating yourself up, not critiquing a certain part of your body negatively as often, maybe trying to divert that to the function of that part of your body, or another way that part of your body serves yourself, or just coming up with one positive body statement a day. And I'm amazed at how it shifts people's minds to be less negative and a defeatist attitude around their eating, and more open to there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and I'm starting to see that I can get there, and I actually kind of like my body now. So a little bit of body image work, a lot of behavioral shifting, baby stepping approaches, picking things you know you can work on successfully in little bites, step by step.
Mm-hmm. I love it. And, you know, so there seems to be, there's the mental framework piece of it, right, where there's the belief system that sets up the bad behaviors, and then there's the application, the practical application, and sometimes that application it's like I'll just create all these mental roadblocks because it's just too hard or whatever. But so I guess, you know, when I think about how I work with behavior change in the workplace, and I'm hearing you talk and I'm looking at so many of the likenesses, because I am a huge proponent of positive thinking. I have said on the show many times, I fundamentally believe that at the base of every decision is a choice between fear and love. And when we are body shaming ourselves, or we're not loving ourselves, and we're building upon disempowered beliefs, we're in the fear space, right? We're afraid we're not enough. We're afraid we won't succeed. We're afraid of multiple things. But when we choose that positive end of it, it's like the other side of the coin, which is the blessing, the love piece, the light. It is loving yourself. It's developing a healthy relationship with food. And so one of the things I recommend to my clients, and I don't know if you do the same thing, but is to just kind of journal out some of your beliefs about yourself, your beliefs about food, about your relationship with food, maybe even the beliefs about the burden that you think food has created in your life, and try to drill down into what's inside of your mind that may be conscious or unconscious, but it's preventing us from the habits and the lifestyles and the relationships with food and other people that we really want. I also think that visioning, you talked about goal setting, and I think that's hugely important, but I also think that bigger than that is the vision. Where do you see yourself? Can you get a vision for how you want to feel and, from a vitality standpoint, how you want to feel about yourself from a self-image standpoint? Because I really think I've gone through a lot of behavior changes through my life, and oftentimes because of medical diagnoses, unfortunately, but it does make you stop and look in the mirror and say, is this really what I want? How did I get here? How do I get out? And creating that vision for me was the gateway to my way forward, because I had to want something badly enough to do the hard work it was going to do to change my habits. So do you do any of that in your work? We're going to go to another commercial break. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Paige Love about our relationship with food. Stay tuned.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of Om Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of Om Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. We're talking to registered dietitian Paige Love about our confusing relationship with food. So if any listeners are out there who have been struggling with this issue in their lives for multiple reasons, whether you've had health issues or just an unhealthy relationship with food and poor habits that you've been trying to overcome for years. We are talking to someone who can help you out. And that's what the show is about, is helping you work through those conflicts inside of yourself so that you can get to a place of peace and a place of greater health and vitality and happiness and a healthier relationship with food. So, Paige, I've got a kind of a practical application question. You know, we've kind of run the gamut on all the different angles of this in terms of psychological and behavioral, and on the practical level, do you think that it would behoove people to channel energy toward collecting recipes, right? As opposed to moving into these structured, standardized, commercialized diets. And I ask that question, it sounds like a really ignorant question, and I own that. But where my head is going with this is, it seems like we live in a culture that we've all been conditioned on instant gratification. We want things now, we want them faster, we want them easier, more convenient, and that gets in the way of a lot of times of our health and happiness. We may get a short-term pleasure from it, but we may get long-term damage that we don't foresee. So when I conjure up the thought of a recipe, it sounds very old-fashioned, but I'm a working mother. My health is very important to me. The health of my children is very important to me. I work hard. I have a very, very busy schedule, and yet I don't want to fall prey into, gosh, the quick fix over and over and over, because I can do that easily. Let me tell you, I could run on protein bars all day long and feel like a happy camper, and I know that is not healthy. So what is a practical way to help us eat more healthy without going to those easy go-to fixes?
Well, you brought up several good points. I do share a lot of recipes with people. I have cookbooks in my office, but I have to honestly say, the kind of people that are coming to see me and who are just very normal people are doing a lot of cooking, and I would love them to be doing more cooking, but they, you know, we're in a fast-paced lifestyle. You know, most families have both parents working, very little time to do cooking. So the kinds of tools in this same vein that have been helpful for most of my clients are some of the meal kits that are out there that make cooking easier, where even Publix has these, where you can go to the ready-to-eat part of the meat counter, and you'll see the kits with already fresh ingredients, pre-portioned, that are healthy. I did one recently that was pork loin, wild rice, butternut squash for two for my husband. And I was really impressed with the portions. It was very Mediterranean style with the colorful high-fiber foods, low fat. Even the fat that you cook with is portion-controlled and in the kit. So that's an example one you can get in the grocery store. But I'm sure you've heard of things like HelloFresh, Green Chef, Freshly. These are, you know, from being sent all the raw ingredients, farm-to-table kind of ingredients, with recipe cards, with pictures of the step-by-step directions on how to do the basic preparation, to something that's already prepared and ready to heat. We have a popular company in Atlanta called Good Measure Meals, and they freshly cook healthy meals, and the meals are pre-approved by dietitians. They're balanced, they're Mediterranean style, high fiber, colorful, everything we've been talking about, just good, sensible, healthy eating, kind of portion controlled foods. And you can pick these up twice a week, and you could do one meal a day, or you could do three meals a day, but all fresh foods, none that's frozen, and you just heat it up, or you may not even have to heat, depending what the entree is for that meal. So from meal kits to ready-to-eat meals, and a lot of you are probably aware there are also mailable ready-to-eat meals that come to you, you know, on dry ice, and you basically heat those. And these are a full range of different kinds of meals out there, you know, from gluten-free to vegetarian to keto. It's all out there. So these kind of tools, I think, are helping today's consumer tackle this eating healthier. Obviously, my preference is that they do it with an all-inclusive, healthier approach with no major nutrient areas being omitted. But as far as recipes, scrap cooking, gourmet cooking, I'm not seeing a lot of people being willing to take that on. There are a sparse few that are, and those are the ones that dig into the cookbooks with me. But honestly, I have a lot of just very practical, quick eating, healthy cookbooks, because so many of my clients need to be able to prepare a healthy meal in less than 20 minutes. And I can't tell you how many people come in my door that aren't eating dinner until 10 o'clock at night. This is not atypical in our culture. So making it easier, and yes, doing more cooking at home, getting away from all the quick dining that's out that we all know has a lot more hidden ingredients in it than we'll ever know in a lot of the fast food and dining out meals, not to mention the portions are supersized at most places. So having more control over your own eating. And for those of you who really want to look at some solid research on what works with healthy weight management, there's been it's been going on for about 30 years now, a long-term longitudinal epidemiological study called the National Weight Loss Control Registry, where successful weight loss losers who were 100 pounds or more overweight and have been able to lose weight 50 pounds or more and keep the weight off, and I might be slightly off on those numbers, but I think I'm close, and what have been the statistical variables that have shown them success. Some of the most interesting variables are that people who are successful with keeping weight off dine out less than 2 times a week. The average person I see coming in dines out once a day. Some of the other variables were that these people exercised an hour a day, not killing themselves, but, you know, getting a good walk in, a brisk walk, or maybe an exercise class, but they did an hour a day of activity. And some of the other ones were that they had, and you hit on this, a motivational factor that triggered their desire to internally want to lose weight. And it could have been some major health issue that came up or just some major life change that helped them realize what their priorities were, but something major helped them shift in their desire to try to change their eating patterns. Another thing was a success factor, and this is why so many programs do encourage this, is that they started to track their eating. And what I have people do is not just track the food, and I actually don't even have people focus a lot on calories. I have them focus on certain nutrient areas. For example, with a vegetarian, I might have them focus on protein grams and quality of protein. For someone that's overeating on refined carbohydrates, I might have them focus on fiber and the balance of fiber and protein at all their meals and snacks. So I'll give people targeted areas, nutrient-specific areas to focus with their recording. For somebody that feels like they're really overeating and just have no concept of hunger and fullness, I may have them just focus on hunger and fullness. Emory psychologists have developed a really cool new app called Mindful Meal Coach, and it helps you to identify your hunger and fullness. And this is a subjective scale, a psychological scale. So you're tuning into hunger and tuning into fullness by just asking yourself, where do I think I am? Starting to create an awareness helps us start to make healthier choices and make a better decision on when we should stop eating. In our society that's so fast-paced, we're not paying attention to hunger and fullness at all. Thus, we bypass that normal fullness signal because we're just not cueing in. So the app has you record where you are just by simply moving the scale with your finger on your phone. And you take a picture of your food. Another new trend with healthy eating is don't get crazy with all these calorie counting apps and obsessing. Why not just find a simple way that works for you that doesn't feel too judgmental? And I'm having a lot of my clients just take pictures of their food. Mm-hmm. Pictures before, pictures after. I can tell a lot from a portion, and so can most people when you see the food on the plate. Mm-hmm. So just food pictures in itself can help you create awareness. And if you have a team of people that are working with you, we get a lot of information from that, those grouping of pictures. You can kind of have a folder in your photo gallery and have it be for your food pictures. A lot less obsessional and judgmental than looking at the calorie count constantly and being told you're over that calorie count type thing. So I move away from the calorie counting kind of things and into more subjective measures and awareness and things that will help with real behavior change. But the monitoring, the less dining out, the balance of food intake with movement, those were some of the most critical variables in this 30-year longitudinal research, and it's still ongoing. They're always looking for people to share. They do an extensive psychosocial history and assessment of what is helping people really change their health, manage their weight, and keep that weight off. It's none of these fad diets, none of them. Another interesting variable is the composition of the diet averages out to be exactly what the Mediterranean diet recommends. None of this crazy high protein, high fat stuff. It's about 50 to 60% carbohydrate, 20 to 25% protein, and under 30% fat. And that's what the Mediterranean diet recommends. Sensible nutrition that fuels your body.
And if you think about it, Paige, aren't the people in the Mediterranean area healthy? Is there any data around that? I think about the times I've traveled and I think these people look, in general, they look healthier than Americans. So I wonder if there's a correlation there culturally.
I know when I was in grad school, I remember learning about that there was lots of data about people who ate fish daily and how low the heart disease risk was for daily fish consumers. You know, Eskimos, for example, they've done some interesting epidemiological research on Eskimos, and, you know, they are eating those high omega fish daily. And of course, those are fresh water, fresh seafood, water fish. So it's wild caught stuff. So we've had that data for decades. So, and that's a key part of the Mediterranean diet. So places where you're getting that fresh food that's not been processed, you know, and it's farm to table type eating, you have much lower disease risk levels versus, you know, the more modernized, urbanized parts of the world where people are eating on the go and eating more processed foods.
Nice. I love it. I love it all. Thank you so much for all this really wonderful, beneficial information. You've given great insights and tips and tools. And I just want to reiterate one more time for our listeners, please stop the diets. Develop a really healthy relationship with food and get the support system you need, right? Create your vision. Look at something bigger than where you are, and then start where you are and make your way. As my friend always says, slow and steady wins the race, right? We don't need instant gratification. It is a pleasure principle. It is not a joy factor. And so I'm on a mission to help create the healthiest, happiest culture we can collectively. And so I hope all the listeners agree that you have given us a tremendous amount of invaluable information on today's show. So thank you. Before we go, can you share with people how they can find you?
Sure. So I'm an Atlanta-based dietitian in private practice, and I have two locations in Sandy Springs and in Buckhead. And the best way to get to me is through my website. So it is NutriFit, NutriFitGA for Georgia.com. So NutriFitGeorgia.com. You can email me directly. It comes to my personal email. We'd be glad to help any of you out there who this resonated with today. We also have a number of free things that we offer. I offer a free emotional eating support group every Saturday, and I also offer two fun meal support groups, the Breakfast Club and the Dessert Club, to learn how to eat mindfully, address dining out issues and fears, and really to just learn how to broaden your horizons with trying new foods in a balanced, mindful way. And those are free support groups that I offer, all three of those. And I also offer a monthly mindful and fun movement outing. So lots of free things. Check out our website, and I hope to see some of you in the near future. Thank you so much for letting me today.
Thank you so much, Paige. Take care.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to everyone next week on the next episode of Conflict Rising. Until then, take good care of yourself.